Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming from our studios through New York City and all over the world. I'd like to welcome you. Today, we're going to look at the role of breath in healing both stress and anxiety, and also emotional imbalance. My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Patricia Gerbarg. Dr. Gerbarg is a medical doctor, assistant professor in psychiatry at New York Medical College. She is also a holistic psychiatrist. That's rare. She is a graduate of Harvard Medical School and Boston Psychoanalytic Institute, and she engages in mind-body practices. In addition, she works with her husband, Dr. Richard Brown, a clinical professor of psychiatry at Columbia University, and she's authored many books and articles in this area. So that will be our, I think, very beneficial guest that will help us in a lot of ways. Also today, a call to action. I'll be giving you the latest on the single most destructive thing that could happen to our economy and to our rights, and that is the new Pacific Trans-Pacific Treaty, the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. What's wrong with it? Why hasn't the mainstream media discussed it or investigated it? It's really, really bad. I'll tell you what we can do and should do immediately to challenge it. Also today, from our segments on issues, we're going to look at preying on the poor, how our government and virtually all the major corporations use the poor to exploit them and make money from them, as well as turning out the lights. The largest U.S. cities are becoming cesspools of filth, decay, and wretchedness, and we're adapting to it. We're not stopping it. It's getting worse. Now, granted, many people, myself included, I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, one of the more preferred neighborhoods in the United States. It's just a bastion of intellectualism, creativity, lots of families, lots of people who work at the universities, Columbia University and Barnard, and a lot of corporate America's up there. So you walk up and down the streets, you wouldn't know that there's a problem. Go to the restaurants, they're busy. I walk down frequently to Lincoln Center, beautiful oasis of culture purity. You can go to art films, walk further on down a half a mile, you're on Broadway. Now, what about the rest of America? What about Detroit, cities that we may never been to? You know, we've been to Boston and New York and Washington. What about Cleveland, Baltimore, Memphis, New Orleans, Oakland, St. Louis? They are cesspools. Only tiny little oases exist, and it's going to get worse. I'll go into that. Those are our two issues. Needless to say, we have a lot to share. Let us begin. I'm very concerned about what is happening with the genetic engineering movement. Today, within the hour, on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and GaryNull.com and my Facebook page, all three, we will post the newest article. Please read this article and share it with everyone, because we will show and prove that the Stanford study that came out recently, that was covered by all the media in the United States, that showed that organic is no better than traditional growing and genetic engineering growing, it was financed by the largest big agro manufacturer in the United States, Cargill, and also by the big companies like Monsanto. We'll show you how they put the money behind this, their scientists were on it, how people who used to get money from the tobacco industry to tell you that cigarette smoking was not harmful, it was one big PR campaign. So we've written the details. We've also added more studies from peer-reviewed literature proving that organic is better on all levels. The pesticides, the nutrient density of the foods that are grown organically, the sustainability. So now you have one very good document that you can use for those who are the naysayers who don't want to go organic and want to believe in this. Also, it just informs people otherwise might stop buying organic because they thought, well, there's no difference. I read the article. It was on the news. Yes. But this is the backstory. So anyhow, that will go up today. Please read it. This is the latest from scientists who are wary of of using genetically engineered seeds in Australia. I'll quote this from Adam Cresswell of The Australian. Scientists from three countries are warning about making Australia the first nation in the world to introduce genetically modified wheat crops that could pose a significant health threat to humans and other animals. The wheat crop in question, believed to be undergoing field trials in Western Australia, is genetically modified to produce a grain with a lower glycemic index, which is touted as healthier because the carbohydrates are more gradually absorbed. This in turn delays the return of hunger pangs and helps reduce sudden swings in blood sugar, which is particularly good for diabetics. But molecular biologist Jack Heineman from New Zealand's University of Canterbury will unveil today work that suggests an enzyme in the wheat, which is suppressed by genetic manipulation to achieve the lower GI benefit, is similar to a human enzyme responsible for producing glycation, a critical part of the energy-making process. Professor Heineman and other experts from Britain and Australia who were asked by pressure group the Safe Food Foundation, which is linked to the environmental organization Friends of the Earth, to give their opinions, said that the evidence the DNA-like molecule suppressing the wheat enzyme could transfer to humans and animals with fatal results. Quote, the issue here is that these small RNA molecules can transmit through food to people even when it's cooked or processed. That's according to the professor. So, one more reason to be against genetically engineered food, and now they've gone from corn to soy to cotton and now to wheat. And they are only partially correct. Yes, when you eat wheat like a piece of bread or a pasta, you will have a spike in your blood sugar levels. Your glucose level will go up. It really should be around 70 to 80. But when you start getting above 80, and especially when you get up 90 to 100 with a fasting blood sugar, you're either pre-diabetic or about diabetic. You get up around 110, 120, you're diabetic in almost all cases. So when you're eating something that's going to throw that blood sugar up, that's not good. However, most people who are on a gluten-free diet are not on a gluten-free diet because of the glycemic factor, but because of the allergens. And this will do nothing to limit the allergens. That's the reason you don't want to eat the gluten. Here's another reason not to eat genetically modified anything. They are talking about that genetically modified crops could cause liver failure. And this is from Sean Cowan, the West Australian. And he's talking about Flinders University biochemist Judith Carmine and molecular geneticist and expert Michael Antonio from King's College London. And they're saying that these genetically modified foods can adversely affect the body and end up with liver damage. So, one more reason to say no. And just as an update, every day and every evening we are working. I even brought in another editor and another producer to break up all the 5.5 hours we're still left with into shorter segments so we can start sending this out in the next 2 weeks. We will have a finished full film probably in 2 to 3 months, but we've got to get this material out prior to that, to California. And so for all of our listeners in California, I'll announce when the first batch of 20-minute segments will be sent to you. And then please get this into every possible venue you can, because it shows you why we must label genetically engineered food at the very least and ban it in an ideal way. Next up, can fluoride calcify your arteries? Now, we know from a study published in the journal Nuclear Medicine Communications this month, researchers assessed fluoride's uptake and calcification in the major arteries of over 61 patients who were administered sodium fluoride. By the way, that's just the same sodium fluoride you find in most fluoridated toothpaste and mouthwashes. Here's what the study revealed. Quote, the coronary fluoride uptake value in patients with cardiovascular events was significantly higher than in patients without cardiovascular events, end quote. According to GreenMedInfo, quote, they also found that there was a significant correlation between fluoride uptake and calcification observed in most of the arterial walls. What's that mean in lay language? It means that the fluoride itself is likely to stimulate the precipitation of calcium within the arteries, something you do not want. We already have abundant knowledge and scientific verification that vascular calcification is correlated with cardiovascular disease, death. It's called hardening of the arteries. And hardening of the arteries, in part, is due to calcification of plaque, which subsequently becomes brittle and susceptible to breaking off into an artery clog obstructing clot. So if you're taking in fluoride in your water or toothpaste or mouthwash, then you could be inducing calcification. And that's not good. But it's not the first such study. There was a study back in 2001 on autopsies on cadavers revealed that fluoride accumulated in the pineal gland, and that's associated with enhanced calcification of that endocrine organ. That's a bad thing. So one more reason to get the fluoride out of your system. Now, how can we boost our strength to an optimum level and endurance? The latest research shows that we can add carnitine, carn, C-A-R-N, itine, I-T-I-N-E. Carnitine comes from the Latin word for flesh, carnis. And it's a nutrient that's primarily important in fat metabolism and energy production in the cellular mitochondria. Quite simply, you boost your strength and energy and can slow down the aging process by making sure that you have adequate amounts of carnitine in your body. Now, our liver will produce, as well as our kidneys, some carnitine, but it's most concentrated in the heart and the skeletal muscles, where it plays an important role in energy production and detoxification. And L-carnitine is the bioactive form, and it's derived from amino acid L-lysine. And carnitine is what we call conditionally essential nutrient, meaning that our bodies will produce enough, but when you start stressing and you're overworking out, you can't. Now, we know that the mitochondria is the energy factory of our cells. That's what powers our body. Over time, you lose less and less capacity of your mitochondria to produce energy. And that is one of the ways that we know someone's aging. They're tired. So that creates a cycle. The more tired you are, the less likely you are to want to exercise. And without exercising, your whole body's metabolism shifts into another gear. And your heart rate goes up. Not a good thing. By the way, I do have now on my website the article that I wrote showing how I was able to establish that a lowering of the heart rate, the pulse rate, every 60 seconds, your pulse goes maybe 50 to 80, 90. And the higher that pulse is, resting pulse, the more likely you are to die earlier. And by exercising, you can reduce that. So I showed the actual studies from the peer-reviewed literature in cardiology and in sports medicine to prove that. I then used studies that I had done, plus my own clinical work, to establish the time frame. And I'll just give you one example. This is just about one example out of tens of thousands. I had a gentleman come to see me back in 1993. His name was Ed Finkelstein. He was an engineer. He had an advanced disease that required a really serious operation. His wife taught nursing. His daughter was a medical doctor, very orthodox. He was so bad with his heart, he couldn't even walk up one flight of steps. He had major blockage in this carotid artery. That's the artery leading to the brain. And I said, why did you come to see me? And he said, simple math. I looked up all the studies of how likely would it be that I would die during an operation at my age? And it was very high. It was almost 20%. And I didn't want to take that chance until I tried everything possible. And so even though my family is not supportive of my choice, I wanted to come see what you had to say. So I went down to meet him, and we sat on a stoop of the building at 72nd and Broadway, where my office was at that time. And for the better part of 2 hours, I spoke with him, and I gave him what I considered the best protocol I could. And then about 2 months later, he came in and began to take chelation therapy and vitamin drips, everything that we had to offer there through our medical group, he was doing. And he was feeling better. Now, when he came in the first time and he got his complete physical exam and brought all of his medical records, his resting pulse rate was over 80. His heart was having to work that hard to get blood through his arteries. And 1 year later, it was 65. And he was able to reverse about 80% of his blockage in his carotid arteries. Not only that, but several months later, his wife came in one day, and she had Bell's palsy that day, very bad. Now, being an instructor in nursing, she knew that, A, there's a probability it would cause paralysis that could be permanent in that side of her face, drooling, drooped mouth, drooped eyelid. And I suggested there is a therapy that you've probably never heard of called ozone therapy, and there's no downside to it. There's no toxicity. Why don't you try it? And to her credit, she did, and in 2 weeks, her palsy was gone. We then did a scan of the entire world literature at that time and could find no case of anyone reversing full Bell's palsy in 2 weeks. Nowhere. And she was aware of that. So then she began the whole protocol with her husband, and they did it together. They went from being in the shape they were at the beginning to becoming world-class athletes. Not only that, but for 5 or 6 straight years, he and she were USA Track and Field senior athletes in America, the Metropolitan Athletic Congress's senior athletes out of thousands competing in New York. And they just never lost. In fact, in one race around Central Park, he beat the great Olympian, Ted Corbett. They had outstanding quality of life. Now, he passed several years ago, but he had 15 quality years onto his life where they were able to go dancing and hiking. Everything they wanted to do, they were able to do with absolute vibrancy. Now, when someone comes to you at 72... who has not lived a healthy life, and you're able to give him 15 extra years, imagine had he started earlier. Same with Linus Pauling. I remember once when Pauling told me that he had been diagnosed with cancer, and I was talking to him about what I would suggest he do, and he went on to live to be 94, 95, and he said to me, in one of the last conversations we had, he said, "You know what they're going to do when I die?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Well, they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, how good is vitamin C? He took all that vitamin C, and it didn't do him any good. They won't look at the fact that I'm, you know, 95 years old and would have been dead a long time ago, and I smoked and drank and did not have a healthy life for the first 50 years of my life." He says, "What if I'd lived my whole life healthy?" And he's right. He'd be alive today. Interesting how what side of an argument we choose to look on to support our particular biases. In any case, Ed Finkelstein and his wife Dorothy, two of the most wonderful human beings you've ever met, just upbeat, positive, and they're only one example of what happens when you get a person healthy and that pulse rate goes down. And then, well, I've had so many people, and then I've had 47 clinical studies with over 36,000 people. And in every single case, we take their pulses and blood pressure before, during, and after the studies. and we're finding at least 10 years on those people who had high blood pressure, heart disease, and compared to the national average that they've been able to add when they drop that pulse down from the high 70s into the low 60s. But then just the scientific literature in and of itself shows that when you lower your pulse rate, you're reducing your risk of death and heart disease, heart attack, and stroke. So it's all in the article. It's all peer-reviewed study. So take a look at it. One more reason why you should get out there and start exercising and take your pulse and get it down. So now here's a study on carnitine, and they're suggesting about 500 milligrams a day. And that's good. I would suggest 500 to 1,000 a day. And finally, when it comes to carnosine, that's C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E. Sometimes people confuse carnitine and carnosine. Carnosine is an antioxidant. It's a phenomenally good chelating agent, meaning it traps heavy metals and takes them out of the body safely. It improves cellular function, and according to a research published in PLOS One, one of the best scientific journals, carnosine can help to dramatically reduce the formation of amyloid beta protein associated with brain tangles seen in Alzheimer's disease. So if you want to have a healthier brain, take your carnosine. And I'm suggesting 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day. If you have Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or ALS, a lot more than that. But hopefully you'll be doing that under some form of professional holistic care. And also it enhances the production of the mitochondria. And so if you want to protect your telomeres, the end caps of your chromosome, carnosine helps do that. It's really helping protect your mitochondria from damage, from stress or glycation. So it's just one more of the arsenal we have. That's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to have you with us today. Now let's go over and take a look from our environmental segment. This is what we have found, and this is coming from Common Dreams, their staff. Quote, Big Agra directly funded the anti-organic Stanford study, a study released just last week by Stanford University scientists which claims organic foods are no more healthy than non-organic, was funded by corporate agriculture and biotechnology giants. And Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Cargill, and so that's where it's at. All right. All you have to do in America is look at who's funding something, and then you'll know where the bias is on that. Now for our newsmaker update, our call to action. This is from Ian Keith. He says, Dear friends, details are leaking of a top-secret global corporate power grab of breathtaking scope, attacking everything from free internet to health and environmental regulations, and we just have days to stop it. Big business has a new plan to fatten their pockets, a giant global pact with an international tribunal to enforce it, that is kept top secret for years, even for our own lawmakers, and then brought down like a Death Star on our democracies. Big Tobacco, Big Oil, Big Pharma, Walmart, and almost 600 other corporate lobbyists are all in on the draft, including limits on smoking laws, affordable medicine, and free speech on the net. The latest round of negotiation ends in just 3 days. But outcries in each of our countries could shake the confidence of negotiators and scuttle the talks. Let's get to a million against the global corporate takeover. And the deal called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is written to protect investors from government regulation, even if that regulation is passed in the public interest. Leaked versions suggest that TPP would undermine protections for air and water safety and reintroduce measures from the U.S. Internet Freedom Attack, as well as steamrolling efforts to produce generic affordable medicines. Worse still, lawmakers who fail to conform to the TPP's rules face sanctions in an international tribunal, a place where corporations can sue us for deals previous governments signed in secret. Negotiators say this is just a trade agreement written to facilitate investment and profit for all. But the leaked draft imposes so many limits on citizens' protections, it's clear this so-called trade agreement is skewed to put corporate profit above people's needs. That's not surprising, since it's been drafted in secret with almost 600 corporate lobbyists. But there is hope. Australia is bucking against the international tribunal system. New Zealand is objecting to the takeover of its medicine pricing protections that keep drugs affordable. Massive public opposition casting doubt on every country's ability to sell TPP at home would derail the talks for good. Sign a petition and let people know about it. Let your politicians know about it. U.S. candidate for Senate Elizabeth Warren, in a recent speech, said, quote, corporations are not people. People have hearts, they have kids, they have jobs, they get sick, they cry, they dance, they live, they love, they die. And that matters because we don't run this country for corporations, we run it for people. So let's reach 1 million to stop the corporate takeover of our governments. And so what you can do is this. Go to progressiveradionetwork.com. And Sharon Pride, our archivist for almost 20 years, has put this up there, and we'll ask Ian and the others to make sure on our webmaster that it's there for you. And we also will ask Jeremy to load up as many articles today why we should all be opposed to this Trans-Pacific partnership. This is NAFTA on steroids. It is bad to the bone. We do not want it. We don't need it. It's terrible. Now, we'll go to two issues that I would like for you to think on and then call in on. This one is about the collapse of our society. But here's the problem. It's just like the quantitative easing that was announced yesterday and caused a 210-point bounce up in the stock market. People think it's a good thing. It is not. It's only good for those too big to fail banks that continue to take unlimited amounts of money with no interest and no rules of repayment and exploit anything and everything they can. They'll be buying up tracts of land in Africa to manipulate the price of food. They'll be investing in equity partnerships. They'll put money that can make money without having to build anything and hire anyone. And they do it all in secret. That's the only benefit that's going to come from another quantitative easing. It also dilutes the money supply. Not a good thing. But then again, we're told that it's all too complex for us to understand. No, it isn't. We do understand it. We've been explaining it, and we've been complaining about it nonstop. And also, the other day I had on my program, on my progressive commentary hour, I had Mr. Baker, an economist, who said not to worry about China and Russia and the dollar not becoming the reserve currency. I chose not to debate him on that issue that evening because I had so much I wanted to share that I wanted him and my guest to share. But I am very concerned, and I do not hold that view that he has. This just came in this morning from the Economic Collapse blog. Quote, China and Russia are ruthlessly cutting the legs out from under the U.S. dollar. I'll quote this as short. The mainstream media in the United States is almost totally ignoring one of the most important trends in global economics. This trend is going to cause the value of the U.S. dollar to fall dramatically, and it is going to cause the cost of living in the United States to go way down. Right now, the U.S. dollar is the primary reserve currency of the world, even though that status has been chipped away at in recent years. The U.S. dollars still make up more than 60% of all foreign currency reserves in the world. Most international trade, including the buying and selling of oil, is conducted in U.S. dollars. And this gives the United States a tremendous economic advantage. Since so much trade is done in dollars, there's a constant demand for more dollars all over the globe from countries that need them for trading purposes. So the Federal Reserve is able to flood our financial system with dollars without it causing a tremendous amount of inflation, because the rest of the world ends up soaking up a lot of those dollars. But now that is changing. China and Russia have been spearheading a movement to shift away from using the U.S. dollar in international trade. At the moment, that shift is happening gradually, but at some point, a tipping point will come. For example, if Saudi Arabia were to declare that it will no longer take U.S. dollars for oil, and the entire global financial system is going to change. When that tipping point comes, the global demand for U.S. dollars is going to absolutely plummet, and nightmarish inflation will come to the United States. If such a scenario sounds far out, then you have not been paying attention. In fact, China and Russia have been working very hard to move us towards exactly such a scenario. China and Russia are now the buddies that neither would be to the United States. The truth is that they are both ruthless competitors of the United States, and leaders from both nations have been calling for new global currency for years. They don't like the United States, and they don't like what we've built, and especially they don't like the reserve currency exchange that we control. Just the other day, China and Germany agreed to start conducting an increasing amount of trade with each other in their own currencies. You would think that a major currency agreement between the second and fourth largest economies on the face of the planet would make headlines all over the United States. Instead, it was total silence. So, and at least there were some reports in the international media. For example, this is from Reuters. Germany and China plan to conduct an increasing amount of their trade in euros and yuan, the two nations said in a joint statement after talks between Chancellor Angela Merkel and Chinese Premier in Beijing on Thursday. And it's going to go further down that track. So when we're giving trillions of dollars at zero interest to too-big-to-fail banks to play with, to gamble with, and not a nickel to small businesses, to homeowners who are underwater, shouldn't that tell you what you're dealing with? And finally, before we go to our guest, I'll quote from this latest article. Once upon a time, the largest U.S. cities were the envy of the entire world. Sadly, that is no longer the case. Sure, there are areas of New York City and Boston and Washington, Los Angeles that are still absolutely beautiful. But for the most part, major cities are rapidly rotting and decaying. Cities such as Detroit and Cleveland and Baltimore, Memphis, New Orleans and St. Louis and Oakland were all once places where middle-class American workers thrived and raised their families. Today, all of those cities are rapidly becoming cesspools of filth and decay and wretchedness. Millions of good jobs have been left out of their reality. And there hasn't been good jobs for a long time. And what we see instead is poverty, and it's absolutely exploded. Basically, you can turn out the lights because the party's over. In fact, some major U.S. cities are literally turning out the lights. In Detroit, 40% of the streetlights are already broken, and the city cannot afford to repair them. So Mayor Bing has come up with a plan to cut the number of operating streetlights almost in half and leave vast sections of the city totally in the dark at night. I wonder what that will do to the crime rate in the city. But don't look down on Detroit too much, because what is happening in Detroit will happen where you live soon. And this is from a Bloomberg article. It's only one paragraph. Detroit, whose 139 square miles contains 60% fewer residents than 1950, will try to nudge them into a smaller living space by eliminating almost half of its streetlights. As it is, 40% of the 80,000 streetlights are broken. The city, whose finances are to be overseen by an appointed board, can't afford to fix them. So they're going to turn out the lights. What this means is that there are going to be a lot of neighborhoods that will have the lights turned out permanently. So wonder which neighborhoods those will be. Now, you guessed it. It'll be in the poorer areas. So this is happening everywhere. The ghettoization of the suburbs, violent crimes, kidnappings. We're about to see an enormous increase. My question is, Why aren't we focusing on this as an issue? Because this is something we could resolve. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Let's go over and say hello to my guest, Dr. Patricia Gerbarg, medical doctor, assistant professor of psychiatry at New York Medical College, and an integrative holistic psychiatrist in private practice. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here.
We're going to talk about the role of breath in healing and stress and anxiety reduction and emotional balance. And there are many people teaching meditation and breath exercises and practices, but less who have conducted actual scientific research and who are well-educated in the peer-reviewed scientific literature that actually provide sound advice to support the claims of breathing practices' benefits on mental and physical health. So I like to ask guests with a scientific background to provide some of the research that supports the health topics being discussed. So in terms of breath practices and relieving stress and anxiety and depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, would you share with us now a bit of the biological science for why concentrated breathing does work?
Certainly. It starts with an understanding of what is wrong when we have anxiety and post-traumatic stress. And fundamentally, the problems have to do with the effects of severe or chronic stress on our neurophysiological systems. And what happens is that there are changes in how the autonomic nervous system is balanced. That's the system that regulates all of our automatic functions, our heart rate, blood pressure, the rate which we breathe, our digestive systems, our immune systems, how we burn energy, and so forth. All of the business of the body that we're not consciously aware of, that's all part of the autonomic nervous system. And when people experience trauma or severe stress, it can cause an imbalance in that system. Now, normally, the body's able to reset itself back to a balanced state. But unfortunately, if the stress is too extreme or goes on for too long and overwhelms the system, then you can be left with a chronic imbalance in which there are two parts of the autonomic system. The main branches are the sympathetic part, which is the part that gets us ready to deal with acute dangers. It gets us ready. You've heard of fight or flight. That's the sympathetic system. When there's a danger, the heart speeds up, the breathing speeds up, the blood vessels open up to the muscles to redistribute the blood flow, and our mind is on high alert, ready to fight or run away. Now, when the danger's passed, the other part of the system, the counterbalance, is the parasympathetic system, is supposed to slow the heart down, slow the respirations, restore the normal resting functions of the body, and also allow the mind to relax and calm down. So it's not just the body, but it's also the mind that's very much affected by what goes on in these two systems. And what happens is that in our society, where we're bombarded with stimulation and with stress, we tend to have an overactive sympathetic system. It tends to be ratcheted up, and it doesn't really come down much because we don't get that much rest, peace, and quiet. We're just not that kind of a civilization at the moment. At the same time, the parasympathetic system is underactive, so there's a gap between the two. And therein lies the problem, because as long as there's a gap, we're going to be more likely to overreact to stress or upset, and we're going to tend to have more anxiety, and perpetuate various symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as depression and many what we call stress-related medical illnesses. Those are the ulcers, the irritable bowel syndromes, the high blood pressure, the diabetic, pre-diabetic conditions, all of that, and even the progression of Parkinson's disease or dementias are affected, because when we're in the sympathetic mode, the fight the stress mode like that, it burns a lot of energy and generates a lot more free radicals, which, as you know, cause further damage to all of the tissues, including the brain and other parts of the body. So this is not a state that we want to just have going on and on unchecked. We need to try to shift the system back towards more parasympathetic activity, because that is when the body will be healing itself, restoring its energy reserves, and calming down. So what we look for in the various mind-body practices is, you know, some of those practices are energizing and some of those practices are calming. And we've selected out the practices that are more calming, that will shift the system by stimulating the nerves of the parasympathetic system, which we found will then calm the body down. And also it will rebalance the way that the mind is handling stress and regulating the emotions. So these systems have very far-reaching effects regarding our well-being.
Good.
And there are hundreds of different mind-body practices, and they all have a variety of benefits. But everybody doesn't have time, you know, to sit for 8 hours a day or 4 hours a day every day, you know, doing various practices. We don't have much time. So what we've tried to do is to identify a set of practices that can be easily learned, that don't require a lot of time, and yet that have powerful healing effects, and that will help to shift the body back into autonomic balance. And with that, we've identified several practices that seem to fit the bill, and those are the ones we use.
All right. My last question, could you give us an actual demonstration? The book is called The Healing Power of Breath, Simple Techniques to Reduce Stress and Anxiety, and the website is haveahealthymind.com, so people can certainly get that, and you also have some CDs with instructions. But go through this, please, in detail, and just give us an example of it.
Of one of the breathing practices we use?
Yes, one of the simple ones that could relieve stress.
Right. Well, the basic, sort of the foundation practice, we call coherent breathing. It has other names as well, and it's very simple. There's a particular rate of breathing that optimally balances the sympathetic and parasympathetic system. Now, this varies a little from person to person, but on average, for most adults, the rate of breathing that will do this is between 3.5 and 5 breaths per minute. So the breathing should be with equal inhalation and exhalation. It has to be very gentle and smooth, with nothing being forced or tensed. And simply doing that, breathing at 5 breaths per minute, within 5 minutes, maybe 10 at the most, most people will feel considerably more relaxed physically and mentally. And that's the foundation practice. And then we add enhancements to that. It's very easy. There are websites where a person can get a CD with a little chime track that times your breathing. So you breathe in on one chime and you breathe out on the other. And it's very, very relaxing. You close your eyes, you breathe through your nose, relax your body. And before you know it, if you're doing it at night, you'll be asleep. If you're doing it in the day, you'll feel relaxed. But the other thing that's special about this, because some people say, well, I can breathe it 3 breaths per minute. I can breathe it 2 breaths per minute. And I say, yes, you certainly can. But you're not going to have the specific balance we're looking for, because it enables the mind to relax, but at the same time to be alert and to be also optimizing the cognitive function. So you can feel relaxed while you're solving more complex problems. and you won't get as tired, for example, if you have to work for long periods of time.
I appreciate this, especially in light of so many spiritual traditions using meditation practices that involve sound, like repetitive prayer, a mantra, or simple intonation. There's just something universal in recognizing sounds have a profound impact upon the psyche. So I thank you for the work you and your husband have done. Hopefully people will take advantage of the CDs, the book, Healing Power of Breath, and your website, haveahealthymind.com. All the best to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Patricia Gerbarg, G-E-R-B-A-R-G, and she also is a holistic psychiatrist, as is her husband, Dr. Richard Brown. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Columbia University, and you will recognize them from they're in the No More Diabetes film as well, and De-Stress Naturally. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take some calls now on the issues of the day at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your calls. And powerful lineup. Robert Kennedy Jr., Greg Palast, some other people from Monday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. Please, how they're likely to manipulate the voting process. So please stay with us. Back in a moment with your calls. Be with us, everyone. We're going to go to your calls in the next 60 seconds, but we take one day a week, 3 minutes, just to offer a premium that will help everyone at a great price. This one's a tremendous value, $80 value for $35.99 for two bottles of Maxi Eye Care. You know, the eye care is not a sexy product, but man, is it essential. Because as someone, what did you do last for your eyes? What did you eat? What did you drink? What exercise do you do? And they'll think for a moment and think, well, I haven't even thought about that. Well, you should. So here's what I've done. I've put what I consider the single most important nutrients in the right balance together. And everything from alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin C and lutein and other nutrients, the best abundant carotenoids from fruits and vegetables. And just so that you understand, lutein is found to be highly concentrated in the macula of the eye. And it's called Maxi Eye Care. So you're getting two bottles for the price of one, plus you're getting a $40 DVD on eye care free. So if you suffer from macular degeneration or a lot of other things, astigmatisms, glaucoma, near and far sightedness, look at the different therapies in the documentary. It's all yours. Just give a call. I'm going to give the number to call for our Maxi Eye Care special today. Plus, you get the free Eye Care DVD. All right? Eye Care DVD. You get to see what it means to be a holistic ophthalmologist. And I don't remember ever offering this. So 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. By the way, today at 5 o'clock is our final special on cruciferous vegetables. So you can take advantage of that till 5 today. 877-627-5065 for the Maxi Eye Care. Everyone in this audience should be taking this supplement. Everyone. We're going to take some of your calls now at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And as soon as you call in, let's say hello to Alan. Hi, Alan. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. You mentioned carnosine a few minutes ago for Parkinson's and tremors. Well, I've been to a neurologist. I've been diagnosed with Parkinson's, and he wanted to put me on something called seredulin hydrochloride. And I put it off until I could speak with you, and I was very excited to hear you say that carnosine is good for Parkinson's. But could
well, Alan, understand that I cannot ever tell you or anyone else what your relationship should be, what advice you should accept or reject from your physician. I can't do that, never have. What I would suggest is this. Why don't you go up and look under the holistic protocols on Parkinson's? Now, there are many holistic protocols out there, and all of them have something of value. The articles written in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Editors, where I published, I guess, I'm going to guess, 50 articles. They have a lot of good ones. Life Extension has a lot of good ones. And on my own website, we have a lot of very good ones from peer-reviewed literature. And then see which ones make the most sense to you, which ones you're most likely to be able to apply. And then try different parts of the protocols and see if you can notice over about a 4 to 8 week period a difference. And then if you can, and you're seeing real benefit, less tremors, less dizziness, better ability to sleep, better able to concentrate, then share that with your doctor and let him know the kind of results you're getting as you make these lifestyle modifications. Okay? All the best to you, Alan. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, as you can imagine, I've gotten a firestorm of emails. And by the way, if people want to drop me an email to ask me any questions or they want to make a comment and they want your input, I'm at WHNN, William Harry Nancy Nancy, WHNN at AOL.com. And like I said, as you can imagine, I've gotten a lot of emails about what's happening in the Middle East. And one gentleman said, you know, if we get upset every time a moron who has a criminal record, which this person does that produced a movie, if we react every time someone makes a movie about Islam or draws a cartoon or makes an inflammatory statement, is we're really in trouble. And, of course, your audience is taking a step back and saying, are they just using that because they're all angry? Or is that just, are we just getting the official word of why this is all happening to all the American consulates in the Middle East? What are your thoughts on that?
You have to understand that if, let's just reverse the logic here. Let's say that in the United States or anywhere else in the world, someone produced a documentary showing that Jesus was a pedophile and that he drank and he was a rapist. What do you think would happen in the churches in the United States?
I guess people would react.
They would react because of the person who's associated themselves with Jesus. In life, you have to observe. Mystery is never profound, though we like to believe it is. So we become overwhelmed by what we don't know. And hence, someone steps into the breach to act as the decipher of our ignorance on an issue. So, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, people only see what they are prepared to see. And what that means is that if you over-identify with something, an object, a person, a belief, then you no longer have the capacity to hold yourself in neutral and look at all the different events around something. You immediately react. It's almost limbic. And as a result, these films, they're meant to cause a reaction. No different than a television commercial on Sunday for a beer. It's meant to get someone to react. If you see a cold outdoor climate and a Coors beer that's, you know, being driven through the snow, then if you're sitting at home and you're hot and you're suddenly thinking, well, that's cool, but it has nothing to do with you being cool in that moment. It's putting something in your mind. So we're constantly having people put things in our mind that we then believe are absolute. and on sex, on politics and religion. Those are the three primary areas where we become almost cult-like in our beliefs and devotion. So I believe that you would have the same type of reaction in the United States that you're having in the Middle East, because they've, in effect, they've insulted and degraded the number one reason for a lot of these people's lives. If you've lived your whole life in abject poverty, if you've lived under great stress, if you live in with very few of the physical comforts, then you have to be living for something other than those, because you don't have them. So you live for a faith that the day will come when you pass this earth into another sphere, you will be rewarded. That's why martyrs are created. Oh, look, you can, you know, blow yourself up in these people and you'll be rewarded. And people say, well, if we suffer in this lifetime, we'll be rewarded in the next. In the Middle Ages, when the princes and the royal families and the privileged and the landowners, when they wanted to get people to work harder, they would say, the more you suffer in this world, the greater will be your reward in the next. And so when you defile that which people believe in effect, you're saying everything you've believed in up to this point is of no value. We've just trashed it. So that's why the reactions. And was it politically motivated? Was it ideologically motivated? It's really irrelevant, because everything in the Middle East is going to be turning over again, because none of the revolutions brought real democracy, not even in Egypt. Yes, they were allowed to vote, but look what they voted for. We're angry now. Who was it? Mark Levin last night said on Fox radio that he doesn't believe in democracy if it's not in our interest. But that's not uncommon for people to have that belief. So we only do and support in the United States as an official policy that which benefits us on an official level. So if you end up throwing off 40 years of tyranny and dictatorship and suffering and secret prisons and murder and disappearing, but you supported the United States in the process, we will overlook all that and not hold you accountable. Now you get the capacity to have a democracy. Well, how likely is it that people who have been living in that kind of condition are immediately going to turn around and elect the right people and have the right kind of democracy? It takes time. Do you think, Luann, that our founding fathers were democratic?
Probably in their minds they were. But they still supported slavery.
Well, they said they didn't give the vote to women, did they?
That's correct.
And they still had slavery. They didn't abolish slavery. And they didn't support elections. You were appointed to be senators then. You weren't elected senators. And you had to be a landowner or a merchant in order to have power. So, and these people upheld the position that they should not have to relinquish their privileges within the society. And that's where our society evolved. Wealthy white individuals, the gentry, the landowners, and yes, they were the higher educated. That did not mean that they did not have some weaving of ideals within their belief systems, but they were not an ideal democracy by any means. So I don't fault the people in Gaza or the West Bank who finally got rid of the corruption of Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority for voting in, you know, people who are affiliated with Hamas. It was their first experience. And it will take time for them to understand that real moderates and real humanists and real progressives in an area that has never seen any in power will take time. So right now and for the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see one revolution after another in the countries that we have seen participate. We'll continue to support those that support us militarily. So everything else is simply a sideshow.
Someone else even said that this one man's distorted view of Islam has nothing to do with the beliefs and the compassion and the support from a lot of Americans. So people are feeling that they're being misrepresented by this one person's YouTube, who actually, this guy actually dubbed over lines of actors who had other lines, and he dubbed over his own lines over them. So, and the guy has a criminal record, and people feel that, you know, he's not representative of the United States, and yet they'll take that one act and make the United States the enemy.
Understand something, however. It will be politically aligned. Those who want to use what he has done in the reaction as an excuse to increase our militarization, increase our response, how are you going to punish him? How are you going to punish him? Well, okay, four Americans died who should not have. What about the 4,000 that died this past year over there of innocent civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan and other countries that no one knew about, no one protested in the United States, no one thought to apologize? It was Friedrich Nietzsche. You're familiar with the great philosopher Nietzsche, aren't you?
Yes.
He said, insanity in individuals is rare, but in groups and parties and nations and epochs, it is the rule. So I do not expect masses who have a collective belief based upon strict religious reference to be reasonable. That's not going to happen there or here. It was Thomas Fuller who said, the mob has many heads but no brains. And that's how I would see it in the United States. Thanks for your call. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. I'm Gary Nall. Have a very nice day. And Sunday night, 8 p.m., Talk Back. Now, coming up, the Utrice Lead Show.